Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. All about us returning again and again. And I'm thanking you for joining us tonight. This is Homefront. We are here to talk about issues of the home, family, government, economics, how it all works together. A lot of people have broken themselves into having to be either fiscal conservatives or social conservatives, and I'm here with good news that we can find a place of peace with everybody and make it all work with right answers and good information. So I am Cynthia Davis. I am going to navigate the tour for the next hour when we have an opportunity to learn about some wonderful things. And I brought for those who haven't tuned in before, I am like the Laura Schlesinger. We mix up of Missouri. We do a little government and economics and put it all together and come up with some great ideas. So today we have David Usher, who is the president of the Center for Marriage Policy. And you might, frequently people don't talk about marriage when they're talking about the mess that the country is in, but we have some really good answers. And David, why don't you share, first of all, I want to say thank you for being with us today. How are you doing?
Well, it's marvelous to be on the kickoff show. It's an honor, and it's a good start, and I'm very honored to be here.
Well, what makes you special is we had an opportunity to meet for the first time about 2 years ago, when I was chairing the Children and Families Committee in the Missouri State Legislature and in the Missouri House. And I had this opportunity to discuss this bill that I thought everybody would be so excited about, and you emerged wanting to help with the effort. And I just love the fact that when you really need people who are knowledgeable, there are some people in the state of Missouri who really know how to fix government and make things better. So you came and testified, and I thought, wow, for the whole 8 years I was there, I was feeling like I was walking through a forest, trying to navigate through what's right and wrong and not really having a lot of clarity from the experts or so-called experts who were supposed to be helping on the family issues. A lot of them got stumped. And so I'd like to thank you for being there right when we needed good ideas. And what really is in the news a lot right now is the fiscal cliff. And the thing about, I'd like to get your opinion on a few things, and you might have seen on the show announcement that we're going to talk about it, but a lot of politicians shy away from talking about marriage and family because they don't want to hurt somebody's feelings, or they're thinking, we need to discount anything that has to do with family as being irrelevant because that's a personal thing. Well, you know what? Government got itself in the business of the family the day it started doing social welfare. And so, yes, it is government's business, and yes, there are some answers. So let me ask you, how did we get to a position where we now have all this fiscal cliff stress that they're inflicting on us? I mean, it's almost unpleasant turning on the TV anymore because the news is always talking about how Washington, D.C. is ruining our economy. So how did we get ourselves to this point?
Well, it starts with one word. It's called marriage absence, and the word that goes along with that in parallel, it's a political word, is marriage gap vote, which, the Marriage Gap Boat came about because of various government programs that entitle people only if they're not married, and while taxing people who are married. And so as a result, over time, illegitimacy, which you, at one time was just something that happened in the lower class, became round-robin divorces and remarriages in the middle class. And you know, the problem with the divorces is it's very expensive, and then you have to do it all and live on less money. And so the middle class, you know, a lot of families that used to be middle-class families are now hovering somewhere in the lower class or near the lower class.
Well, a lot of us.
Right.
Well, let me read you what Tony Perkins said on his Family Research Council newsletter that he put out right after Congress voted to do the fiscal cliff deal. He said this: some folks have a tradition of eating pork on New Year's Day, but in Congress, they prefer passing pork as part of the sweeping 150-page tax deal reached yesterday, and that was New Year's Day. The members proved they were just as intent on avoiding fiscal responsibility as they were the fiscal cliff. It seems that the bill that was supposed to extend our tax rates also extended billions of dollars to the Democrats' closest pals. Today, while 77.1% of households watched their taxes skyrocket, the president's friends are toasting the good struck in the bill's fine print. The Democrats' belated Christmas presents included $430 million in tax perks for Hollywood, $331 million for railroad operators, $220 million for Puerto Rico and Virgin Island rum producers, $70 million for NASCAR, $59 million for algae growers, $4 million for electric motorcycle makers, and even $15 million for the asparagus growers. How exciting is that? If this is what President Obama calls a step in a broader effort to strengthen our economy, then Americans had better buckle up.
Well, you said a key word there, and the key word is responsibility. And what happened over time is because of government programs that actively destroy marriage and encourage people not to marry. You know, where does marriage start? Marriage is responsibility. If you don't have marriage, you end up with a sea of irresponsibility. You have children born out of wedlock. You have single moms that are trying to and work, struggling very hard to do it all on less money, but ultimately the kids just don't do as well. You've got a lot of unmarried men out there who have to pay a lot of child support, and the government usually asks a lot more than they can pay. And at one point, and this is sometime in the 1990s, social spending became the largest line item in both the federal and all the state budgets, which is ridiculous when you look at all, you know, states do schools, they do roads, all these things you can see. And then when you realize that social spending is the largest line item at the state level, it's also the largest line item at the federal level, and that even includes on-budget military expenditures. And then you realize that this funding does absolutely nothing except try to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And I think everybody learned at a very young age that you can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And literally we are trying to save all the starfish on somebody else's tax dollars. And it doesn't work, and the expenditures are so high, and the government's been doing this for so long, and there just isn't any more money. The pig has starved to death. There aren't enough people who can pay taxes.
Well, the end result of the bill they came up with contained $25.1 billion in spending cuts, but it contained $330 billion. the spending increases. So clearly we've got some enormous problems, and as long as we keep avoiding the root cause, we're not going to get to the solution. Here's my premise, and you know, don't you wish we could teach Washington, D.C. a lesson?
Well, we can. We all can, and when I say that, I'm including everybody, including single moms and unmarried people, because, you know, we do know that from surveys of happiness is that single moms and people who are never married, or shall we say divorced individuals and people who are never married, are not the happiest people. The happiest people, and this is in international studies, are people who marry and stay married.
Well, let me
and what we have to do is to stop pointing fingers at Washington and start pointing fingers at men or women or all these other things, and just start working on the policy and realizing that marriage absence is everybody's biggest problem. It's, you know, it's kind of like a basketball. It might appear round, but taxpayers, they don't like it. They're looking at it from one side. Single mothers are looking at it from another side. They're not happy because they're getting a few dollars every month, but it doesn't really make ends meet, and they have to live in areas that where crime rates are high. And politicians don't like it because, you know, some of the federal legislators that I know, they really don't like going to Washington because all they're doing is arguing about something that can't be fixed given the current scenario of spending. And so the answer is to start working on marriage policies that get government out of the business of destroying marriage, and policies that help people build marriages, help them keep their marriages on track without spending a lot of money. And we have 10 marriage socioeconomic policies that do just that.
Right. The Heritage Foundation came up with a graph recently on their website that says more than half of all federal spending will be on entitlement programs in 2012. And they said that it actually is like 62% of the federal budget goes to entitlement programs. And really, national defense is only 19%. Interest is 6%, education is 4%, and foreign affairs is 1%, and then all other spending is 8%. So we've got some huge disproportions going on, at least. And I believe that we owe our obligation to take care of those we already said we're going to take care of. But there's a point where this thing has gotten so badly out of control that it's driving the whole country straight down the drain. And nobody in Washington, D.C., I shouldn't say nobody, forgive me, I'll correct myself. A lot of people in Washington, the majority of people in Washington, D.C., really don't seem to be at all concerned. They will vote every time. I remember before they took the fiscal cliff vote, hearing the debate, and as soon as something passed the Senate, the commentators were saying it will pass the House. And so here we go again. And guess what? Brace yourself, because they're going to do the same thing in 2 months. You almost get the idea that they like stressing the American people, but we've got some better ways, and we also have some callers. So I've got two really important people who would like to raise a question, and I'm going to let us talk to Dave, a different Dave. We've got two Daves, and so just if you'll bear with me, we'll get Dave on the line. Dave, are you with us?
I'm here, Cynthia. How are you?
Oh, what a thrill to hear from you. I just want to say thank you for calling into the show. Do you have a question for David Usher?
I was just listening and enjoying the show, and wanted to call in tonight and congratulate you on your first show, and thank David Usher for coming along and helping out.
Well, thank you. This is the epicenter where we're going to come up with better ways to govern, and maybe some of the legislators will want to take notes because we've got some great ideas coming up in, as soon as we get to a few more. Is there any question or anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think you guys are hitting on a key to the issues that keep us together right here with this family unit thing.
Well, thank you. It's a blessing to have you on the show, and you just reminded me that other people can call in too if I will give them the call-in number, which is, if you want to say something, ask a question of the expert from the Center for Marriage Policy, you can call area code 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835, and we will take your calls as we go on with some more ideas. Thank you for calling the show, Dave.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to you next time. Join us again, please. And we have Lisa. Lisa, what a thrill to have you call the show. Are you still with us?
I'm with you. Welcome, Cynthia. It's so great to have you on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Well, somebody needs to continue to give people, hey, there might be people on a Tuesday night between 8 and 9 who were just wondering, but how are they going to correct the country?
There's a lot of work to be done, you know, and this is a great area to start. Everything that I have seen in all of my experiences is that the hugest, most detrimental thing that you can do to a country is to destroy the family. And everything that I've seen, that's where the biggest hit is family destruction of the family unit. And I think that's what's taken the culture right down the tubes.
And what really is evil is the way government is funding it. If they would just stay out of it, leave us alone, we could manage much better. But the interference we're getting from Big Brother is causing a huge problem. We're at a point where there are people who will actually divorce because the benefits are better or not marry at all. Let me clarify. When we talk about single mothers, we're not being stereotypical. I mean, it's not about all lumping them all in one group. And I remember being very offended when I was in the Missouri State Legislature and we were debating a bill on expanding doing something about the minimum wage. And the Democrats stood up on the other side of the aisle, and one of the Democrat legislators had the gall to say, and there are single mothers out there who are slinging hash to make a living, and you're trying to interfere with. And I thought, okay, stop right there. First of all, I don't like that imagery of single mothers slinging hash. That's not respectful. That's not polite. And that's not even something that mature adults want to imagine that they're like that. We don't know. Everybody's an individual. We're all unique. We're all special. We all have gifts to give. And the goal is to empower people. How are we going to take anybody in any demographic and make them bigger and stronger and more able to take care of their own affairs? Because deep down in their hearts, I believe most human beings want to manage themselves and not have government tell them what they have to do. So I just want to say what an amazing woman you are, and I love hearing your show, which is, do you want to give a plug for your show?
Well, thanks. I'd love to. I'll be on tomorrow night at 7. Hope everybody will join us. We have a great lineup tomorrow night. We're going to kind of delve in. On Culture Vigilante, we delve into issues that will help us take back the culture and take back the government on our own, because no one else is going to do it for you. And we have a great guest, Michael Rhodes. I'm really excited about having him on tomorrow night. He owns a business out here in Wentzville, a self-defense business, but he's an amazing conservative, and he's got a lot of great opinions on a lot of other issues about promoting conservative values. So we'll have him on tomorrow night as one of our many guests.
Neat. Thank you, Lisa. We look forward to hearing you tomorrow night. Thanks for calling the show.
Thanks, Cynthia. It's great to talk to you.
Good. Have a good evening.
Thanks, you
now,
too.
Now, if anybody else wants to call, you can join in the discussion. The number is 347-677-1835. I'm Cynthia Davis, and this is Homefront. We're talking about family issues. And I want to ask you a question. We have our expert, David Usher, with us tonight. You posted something on the Center for Marriage Policy's Facebook page, and it was an article that quoted Mike McManus. It said this, Mr. McManus is quick to blame the absence of fathers to deaths or incarcerations, though women point out that many absent fathers live right around the corner. Mr. McManus attributes that to the young age of many parents who are not ready to be tied down. He said women who need help with their children will seek the companionship of other men they think can be father figures. So then they go into this discussion. Ms. Hawkins, the mother of three, lives with her youngest child's father but considers herself a single parent. How is that possible, really? So I'll answer it. Government intervened and made it more advantageous to just live with the man as if you're married than to actually have any level of commitment. So here's what she says. When he's home, he's watching TV. It's his time. I get no help. Financially, he's been a good provider, she said, even for the children who aren't his. But as for being involved in activities, not so much. Her relationship with her eldest child's father ended over his refusal to support their offspring. Her second child's father is in prison. My oldest was raised by both parents, so it's just selfish, she said, but my middle one wasn't raised by either parent, so he doesn't know how. Oh, boy, this is tough. And then the article goes on to say that they think we need more fatherhood initiatives. David, would you please explain to me how the fatherhood initiatives she's calling for, especially if they're run by government, will change anything?
Well, they can't. The problem is the way welfare works, it encourages cohabitation because if she does not marry, she can collect welfare, she gets food stamps. The government thinks that she only reports her income. So his income provides, pays for the rent and everything else. He's living with a woman whose kids are not his, and the chances are she's probably said, they're my kids, I get to discipline them, and I really don't want you to be a father. You don't see a lot of shared parenting necessarily going on in cohabiting relationships. And you certainly don't see the live-in parent being given the same parental authority. And most guys are not going to say, hey, I expect to have the same parental rights to discipline the child as you have. And so it's a very weak bond because she only wants him there to pay the bills. But the problem is when people live together is somebody gets pregnant and then she gets, since she's not married, she gets welfare for that too. And then 3 or 4 years down the road, the government comes around and finds him and tries to get the welfare, collect the welfare back. And then he's mad at her and that's the end of that relationship. So he leaves. And then another guy eventually moves in. And this is why when you go out to the checkout lane at Walmart or many of these stores, you'll see unmarried women who have children that are obviously by so many different fathers. You won't see too many women who have kids with the same father.
Unless they're married.
And so what we have is basically people are taking advantage of the welfare state as an income source, and in doing so, it destroys the entire social purpose and function of marriage. Marriage is what takes two different sexes and turns it into one human race moving forward, raising kids, men and women working together. And I would like to mention that this article, most of the mainstream articles are written from a you know, a pretty radically feminist perspective, and they just don't see marriage as being important at all.
Well, can you explain?
And you know, marriage throughout history, the civilizations that succeed are the ones that are marriage-based, and when marriage goes out the window, they collapse. Rome is a perfect example of it. And that's just simply because, you know, we as a human race, if men and women don't work together and instead we're competing against each other, it's going to be a meltdown. And we are in that meltdown right now in the United States. Everybody's looking for money, and there's no money in the bank. And the only way out of this thing is, and to, I mean, and I can't blame Washington, the politician, you know, politicians in Washington, because you can't just say, oh, well, we're just going to cut everything, because all politicians know that you can't throw half the single mothers in the country out on the street. You just can't, we can't go there. And that's where the Center for Marriage Policy, and I've been working on this very hard for about 15 years, about how do we reverse this trend of marriage absence.
Okay, tell us, how
kind
do
of,
we reverse
this? And what kinds of legislation can do this? In other words, rebuild the institution of marriage in a positive way without making anybody do, and that's the key, we can't make anybody do anything. And so that, those are some of the parameters that I applied in my research. And Mike McManus, who's president of Marriage Savers, and I came up with 10 marriage socioeconomic policies a couple of years ago. And it takes a lot of time to explain them all, but when you add them all up, it is a recipe for balancing federal and state budgets and creating a situation where most men and women get what they want. And you know, most Americans, if you just pick, you know, people and interview them walking down the street, you know, most of them, they just want to be able to have food on the table. They want to have a reasonable place to live in a reasonably crime-free neighborhood. You know, most people do not want to be millionaires. I mean, they'd like it if the money fell out of the sky. But, you know, most people just want the basics. And under the current scenario, the basics are impossible for most people. And so what we have to do is take this mess and change, and it's very, and it's really not that hard to do under socioeconomic policy, because we just take what people want and then enact legislation that gives them what they want without spending, you know, much money at the federal or state level. And, you know, a good case in point, and I'll mention a piece of legislation that is going to be introduced any day now in the Missouri legislature. One of the biggest problems we have that either discourages marriage or encourages marital breakup, and all the primary cause of domestic violence is substance abuse. 70% of serious domestic violence is associated with substance abuse. There's no other factor that ranks as high in domestic violence, and our current federal and state policies don't deal with that problem, with that fact. So hierarchically speaking, if we really want to do something about domestic violence that's going to work, and if we want to do something that will encourage marriage, or, you know, if a marriage is in trouble because of a substance abuse problem, will result in a marriage positive outcome, that just means we need a policy to help the responsible spouse leverage the substance abusing spouse into treatment. And so we have, it's called the Family Intervention Order, and Representative Lyndall Shoemake from Hannibal is going to be introducing it. We're looking for co-sponsors right now. If you're a Missouri resident and you like what you're hearing, call up your state rep, tomorrow, if you can get through the phone to get through to him, because tomorrow is the swearing-in ceremonies. But call him as soon as you can, and have him wander up to Wendell Shoemake's office and ask him to co-sponsor this bill. And what this will do is, if your spouse has a serious drinking or drugging problem, you can get a restraining order removing them from the home, and then the judge gives them a list of treatment centers and says you aren't coming back until you're clean and dry. And we know, back in the 80s, I did a lot of work for volunteer work with the Edgewood Family Program, working with people who were the significant others of substance abusers. And one of the biggest problems is leveraging the troubled spouse into treatment. You can't make them go. they're just, right now, there is no statutory tool to encourage that person to get well. And so what we're doing is, as we know, the government has a very heavy hand, and oftentimes it does the wrong thing. Well, we're going to take that heavy hand and apply it in a way that's going to encourage people to get well. Because most substance abusers, when they have two and only two choices, one, get well, or two, you're out of here and you're going to, aren't going to take much with you when you go. That is the point at which substance abusers hit bottom.
Well, let me ask you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I believe that the problem with the state of divorce in Missouri is the substance abuser might have been fully responsible for turning the home into a shambles, and the innocent party finally can't take what's going on, and then the divorce lawyer usually cuts everything right down the middle, and they get 50-50. That's a whole other topic for why we need divorce reform. But there's something majorly wrong when one person is innocent, the other one clearly went way out of the line, and the judge just breaks it right in half, 50-50. That needs fixing. Can I? We've got another caller. I'm going to let him ask you a quick question here. And
Cynthia.
Yes?
Somebody just messaged me on Facebook and says he's hearing dead air.
Uh-oh.
He's listening to the show. So I don't know if there's a button to push or what.
You should be on.
You shouldn't be hearing dead air. I'm not seeing anything on the board that is causing a problem.
Okay.
We're recording. And if
well, maybe we could have somebody call in and let us know that they're hearing it then.
If they are recording, we are recording, so
yeah.
If we are hearing dead air, all of the shows, Cynthia's shows, will be archived. So they can play it.
It's all good. Hey, I want to say thank you. That's my producer. We're all doing what we can to move the country the right way. Because
to the producer, I'd like to thank the producer very much and just let her know that we're not quite as worthy as she is.
Well, the point is that the current way things are set up is not serving us well.
Correct.
And there are other ideas, and the goal here is to help the innocent party get fair treatment and go on feeling stable. But more importantly, where we can put things together and have the courts are there to do justice. Government is there to administrate justice. Government is not there to administer mercy or charity. Charity belongs to home, family, church, community centers, tea party groups, all of the above. The community is the community, wherever it is. Now, I know that some of the listeners who like grassroots radio may not think Hillary Clinton is somebody to be admired or quoted, but I do want to tell you, she took a lot of flack many years ago in conservative circles for her book, It Takes a Village. And just to enhance my own understanding of her philosophy, I listened to the whole book on audio, and I came away from it with a renewed level of understanding, because what she was saying is it takes a village. That came from an African saying. And a village is the extended family. In Africa, they don't have big government. They do it themselves. They pull together. If a man is being a brute, his in-laws and even his own parents will deal with it most severely. And the whole community will tell him, hey, you're being a jerk. You need to straighten up. And it goes the same way with the woman. I mean, that it cuts both ways. Let me start off there, lest we make it sound like it's always the man's fault. The problem, though, there are some things men do that women don't do. And, David, if you can explain to me your principle, you said when we've essentially turned most of these unmarried men who are fathering all these children into sperm donors, and then they show up at the home, and how you said it was so beautiful, you said, what am I, a piece of furniture? Can you explain that? What's that dynamic to us?
Well, you got to realize biologically speaking, men and women are not any different than they were in 1940 or 1950 or, you know, other decades when marriage was a big deal and most people participated in it. So there's no biological reason for marriage going out the window. What happened, and this I think this is very important to note, is that in the black family in the 30s and 40s, particularly the 40s, poverty was a major problem. And government did a few little things about it. And in the 50s, actually, the poverty rates for poor blacks dropped significantly and kind of bottomed out. And then when the Great Society came along in 1963, which began to entitle everything else at the expense of marriage, that's when poverty rates for blacks started actually going back up. And the lowest poverty rates in the country occurred before we launched the Great Society. And so what that tells you is that everything that we've done since 1963, and if you look at all the overlaying social, economic, poverty data, and you match that up with economic downturns, because, a lot of people say, well, the economic downturn is causing poverty, and that's nonsense. But if you look at the lines, at the graphs, and there is a chart you can see on the marriagepolicy.org website, you can see it for yourself. The economic downturns have very little impact on poverty. It's the marriage absence rates that are driving poverty. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand why, and that's because it takes 1.4 median incomes to be a middle-class family in the United States. And when you're not married, the chances that you can pull down that 1.4 median incomes is pretty small. And so just economically speaking, if you want that middle-class life where you can pretty well pay your bills and you can live in an area that is not bombed out and full of criminals, you pretty much got to be married. And if you look at successful politicians, for example, Barack Obama, he didn't get where he didn't get to be president by being an unmarried man running around having kids with all kinds of women, and neither did his wife. You look at almost all the presidents, they're married. If you look at successful millionaires, most of them are married. In Hollywood, of course, there are a lot of people who get divorced.
But they have bigger paychecks than the rest
of us. Well, they've got massive paychecks, but if you look at them, they're not very happy. They get in lots of trouble. Their kids don't do as well. They commit suicide. They get locked up for drugs or other offenses. And so the point is, if you look at Hollywood couples who are married and remain married, you don't see them in the news they live pretty nice, quiet lives. They go out and do their movies. They have a really good time, and they take the money home. And it works. And so the key to this is since, you know, welfare policy predominantly works in the lower income groups, is establishing, you know, enacting legislation that helps people resolve the normal human problems of marriage. And most people don't understand this. You know, marriage really isn't that hard if you have a roadmap to work with. And every marriage has the 2-year baby blues, the 4-year boredom, the 7-year itch, the 15-year midlife crisis, menopause, and retirement. Those are the normal potholes that are in down the road for every marriage. And when you have people who are prepared to show you how to get through, how to avoid those potholes, and right now there's nothing out there that provides any kind of support, it's no wonder so many people don't know how to conduct a marriage, you know.
Well,
everything is a big deal. And when you go through the 2-year baby blues, the guy feels jilted and he thinks she doesn't love him anymore, and so he goes out and has an affair. Or, you know, you got the 4-year boredom, and they're both bored with each other, and one or both of them have affairs, and then maybe they get even with each other by having another affair.
Can you speak to the libertarian groups, though, who believe that it's none of government's business what is happening in people's private lives? You explained it to me that about personal liberty, which is a value that we all have, or we all should have, and enjoy and appreciate our liberty. But the people who lose the most liberty are the people who are, you invite government into micromanaging your life when you go on government social welfare, and when you end up needing them to dictate when the dad gets to visit and when you get to visit, and that they tell you. I remember when our Children and Families Committee dealt with the college tuition question, and people were coming, and these are Republicans who were complaining that, you know what, if you're married, you don't have to pay for your kid to go to college. Why do you have to pay for them to go to college if you're divorced?
Well, and you raise a good point, is that, you know, the noisiest people in the last elections were the libertarians. You had a Tea Party, and they had huge meetings all over the place, and it was so huge that Republicans even went around pretending that they were Tea Partiers just to get elected. And about the Tea Parties, if you listen to what they're complaining about, they're complaining about government taking away their money and government killing their businesses and telling them what to do. But, you know, when government doesn't get in front, when government policy doesn't get in front of the human problems, like, you know, our family intervention order that we're talking about. See, our family intervention order is brilliant because it doesn't make anybody do anything. If a married couple wants to drink themselves under the table every night, nobody cares, and the government doesn't have power to do anything. If you're happy with that, go right ahead. What we do is we empower spouses and put power tools. It's kind of like a, you know, our policy is just a toolbox. That's all it is. We're going to build a toolbox that's got a lot of really great tools in it, and you can, when you get married, the tools are all there to, for example, you know, with the family intervention order, if your spouse is a drunk and it's tearing up your marriage, instead of having to get a divorce or live with it, you can have the government help you get your spouse into treatment, and then the chances are 60% to 70% that your marriage will survive, maybe even better.
Well,
in other words, we empower people to get what they want with power tools that will make that happen. And so by focusing on marriage positive policy, which gets in front of the problems, as opposed to current government policy, if you look at what government does today, everything's done by crisis management. Oh, we have this problem. We have to lock somebody up. Or, oh, we got poor moms. We got to throw all kinds of money so that they don't starve to death. And that doesn't work. It's just, we've been doing this for 50 years, and it's to the point where they can't even figure out how to do a budget in the Senate. You know?
Right.
It's
there are
impossible.
A lot of things.
That's why we haven't had a budget for 3 years, is because no matter how you cut it, the numbers won't work.
And the scary part is there doesn't look like there's any hope on the horizon for anything to change. We're in for 2 years of another nightmare. I mean, there's that with the group that just got elected to go up there, we're not seeing any opportunity for change. So brace and get ready. Tell us.
They don't know what we know. They don't have marriage policy under their belt.
What happened in November, though, that cost us, we really saw some very unfortunate outcomes that really did surprise many of the political watchers, even the fact that our country seems to be turning towards socialism. We're saying, I want bigger government. I want more welfare. The word socialism is no longer a negative word. What is going
on
with
that?
Well,
you want to know why that is?
Go ahead.
when Ronald Reagan won the presidency in the 70s, if you look at his campaign talks, just about all he did was talk about the advance of socialism. He won, but that was in a day when almost, the majority of the nation was married, and people understood that, and they had a stake in preventing socialism. The problem is that starting in 1963, the liberals started trying to help people and enacted all these various federal programs to help people. And the Republicans didn't have better policy. All the Republicans did was said no when they complained about socialism. But ultimately, even the most evangelical of all Christians, they're not going to let single moms live in the streets. And so you have a lot of conservatives, people who are who end up going with the liberal policies. And so ultimately, ever since the days of Reagan, you had a lot of Republicans for lack of anything better to do, they ended up going along with Democrats. So what happened was, Democrats in this football game, legislation is just a football game, that's all it is. The liberals have had a very strong offense and a pretty good defense. And Republicans have never had an offense to begin with. They've had the defense consists of saying no and complaining about socialism. And now in 2012, we see that the Republicans have lost the legislative war. And that's where we come in with the Center for Marriage Policy is our policies are not emotional. They help people more than the liberal policies do. For example, let's take a single mom. Let me just draw a picture for you. Close your eyes. Everybody close your eyes. And imagine we're out in the ocean. This is kind of like Waterworld, the movie Waterworld. There's a single mom out there in the ocean, and she's clinging to a hunk of wood. The Democrats come along in their boat saying, here's a little food so you don't starve to death. The Republicans come along and saying, we're going to take the piece of wood away and maybe the food too. Well, guess who she's going to vote for? That's the legacy Republican politics that has been going on ever since the days of Ronald Reagan, and it didn't change in 2012. If you look at Romney and what the Republicans are talking about, no wonder they lost. And the marriage gap vote was the deciding factor. And what our marriage policy does is a huge game changer because, you take your single mom floating around out there in the ocean. Democrats come along in their boat offering her a little food. And the Republicans come along in their boat and saying, here, get on the boat. We're going to take you to dry land. Now, who do you think she's going to vote for? who do you think she's going to follow? And that's what our policy does. We are going, you know, just, we can move women and men and everybody out of all the problems that they have in marriage absence towards much happier, more stable, more successful lives.
Empowering
just by slightly changing how these programs work so that they're not marriage negative. That's the
making
key.
Us strong. Making,
right.
Giving us the chance to take care of ourselves, because deep down inside, even people who are on government programs would be happier if they had the autonomy and the freedom to make their own decisions on how to direct themselves with their own money. When I was chairing the poverty committee in the Missouri House, we had an expert come in from the Cato Institute, and he provided us with a graph that showed that the average single parent on welfare is receiving the benefits in Missouri equivalent to a $42,000 a year job. And his explanation was people are not going to be able to step up from minimum wage to a $42,000 a year job. So what we've done effectively is we've rewarded those who are on the programs because they get a lot of perks. They get the Section 8 housing, they get food stamps, they get TANF, temporary assistance for needy families, cash payments. Then they also get there are so many programs, the WIC program, Women, Infants, and Children, and the list goes on and on. It's not just end vouchers for the food pantries, and there's more. But wait, there's more. And
yeah.
On top of all the private charities that are trying to make a difference. But as government grows bigger, the charities are diminishing, and none of them are a great answer. None of them are what we want. We are fed up. We have got too much government already. So believing that the deep down inside people's hearts, what they really want is their freedom back, and we've stripped them of that, not to mention their dignity, how are we going to pull forward? And that's what I believe you're saying with the log of, do you want to tread water hanging on to a log, or do you want to get into a boat and mature past this?
Exactly. And the $42,000 income that you mentioned is treading water. When you're a single parent, you have to pay people to fix the plumbing. You have to pay a lot of money for daycare so that somebody's taking care of the kids for you when you're working or whatever, you know, whatever you got to do. And but if you marry, and between the two of you, you pull down the equivalent of $25 an hour income, which really isn't that hard to do if you have two people working. That $25 an hour total amounts to $52,000 a year income, and you don't have to pay for. You probably won't have to pay for daycare because one of the parents can be taking care of the kids when the other one's working. And when the plumbing breaks, hopefully somebody knows how to grab a wrench and do something about it. And, you know, in other words, this is the key to self-sufficiency, is the natural structure of marriage. And the people who are, when you have two people who are being responsible, caring for each other, the responsibility isn't something you can make people do, but people will naturally do it if you change the policy so that if you change the policy so they just naturally do it. And one of the important keys in this is the Marriage Savers Program, and this is one of the reasons why Mike McManus, who's on our board of advisors, he runs the Marriage Savers Program. Well, it's not a program, but it's what it is. He sets up Marriage Savers meetings in churches. And if you move out to Modesto, California, you'll find one in just about every church out there. And interestingly, if you go out to Modesto, you'll find that the divorce rates are 40% lower than anywhere else in the state of California, and the marriage rates are 20% higher than anywhere else in California. And all the meeting is, it's a support group where troubled couples can go in and they hook you up with a mentor couple who had the same problem and survived. And it's free. It doesn't cost anybody a nickel. And then we harness one of the greatest natural resources that we have in America today are all those old married couples who've been there, done that, and they've been married for 30 or 40 or 50 years, and they're retired, and they don't have anything to do right now because they're retired. And there's nothing, no greater thing that they can do for America right now than to just be volunteer mentor couples and help younger couples survive the potholes of marriage that I referred to for free. And all we need is a Marriage Savers program in just about every church, and they could be other places too if people wanted to bring them up. But we're kind of focusing on churches because there's a church every place, right? And so, you know, this is all part and parcel of our marriage policy is putting legislative tools that leverage government to help people, you know, encourage marriage and put in place support tools so that people can make their marriages work, easily make their marriages work.
Well, I appreciate your insights, and of course, you know, there was plenty of analysis on what happened in the last election, because it really, if the trend continues, we're headed for very dark days ahead. And what some of the analysis discovered is that not only did most of the unmarried women go for Obama, but most of the unmarried men went for Obama. And that seemed a little bit surprising because, you know, really a vote for Obama really was a vote for wanting bigger government, more taxation, and more really intrusion into our lives. And the intrusion is always related to a cost. It amazes me that nobody can look at the budget and not see that the intrusion and the expense is driving us the wrong way. The question is, what can we do to change anything? Because it's really, the course we're on is not good. You have any parting words you want to share with us?
I want to, all the listeners that are in Missouri, I encourage them to get involved with what we're doing. You can friend me. We have the Center for Marriage Policies on Facebook. And help us get our we have two major bills going in Missouri this year, the Family Intervention Order, and then the other one is called Responsible Dissolution. Missouri will be the first state to get rid of no-fault divorce. And just in a nutshell, no-fault divorces cost more than most people can afford. They end up broke. They end up fighting over the kids. No-fault divorce by its very structure is a war. And it does not serve anybody very well. And responsible dissolution is going to change it so that most divorces will be by mutual consent. If you both agree that things aren't working out, you just lay it out and file it with the court, and then you're done with it. And then for cases where you have real serious problems, obviously you have to have a mechanism that works pretty quickly, because there are some pretty nasty marriages out there. And for that, we have responsible dissolution, which can happen very quickly, but you do have to have a good reason for needing a divorce. And I'll kind of leave it at that because we're running out of time. But I think when people see that Missouri is going to be the first state to replace no-fault divorce with something that actually works and is far less painful for couples, and I don't believe that we're going to see an increase in relationship breakups. And here's a reason why. I've worked in China, I've been in China, and they have very low divorce rate, despite the fact that anybody can get a divorce by wandering into a local license office, paying 72 cents and signing a piece of paper.
Well, thank you for joining us. We're going to put this.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.
Abrupt at the end. I apologize. Are you not there?